When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am your host this evening, Gary Cocker, and I am joined by the Cain and Abel of the podcast. It's the Anderson brothers. First of all, let's go to Craig Anson. How are you?
I'm good. How are you both? That's a terrible way to do it. How can I say how are you both when the second person has not yet been introduced fully?
That's a great way to bring him in, Gary. A great way to bring him in. Tony, how are you?
Yeah, I'm grand. Thanks for asking. Just been pottering about. I had some men come today, some tradesmen. They came into my garden because I used the mini digger. I maybe told people this before. I took a mini digger into the garden because it was like overgrown, and I had a pile, and they laughed at me when I brought them in because I was asking for a quote for them to come and take it away. And they said that there's over 5 tons of soil and stone. And they were like, it'll cost you like well over $1,000. So I've taken this to Mandy. And now I think we're going to be getting a huge skip and maybe buying some sort of machine to carry it over. But me and the boys had a good laugh at Mandy's expense. I just threw her under the bus for absolutely everything that they questioned.
It's the only way to go. You could always Shawshank it. You know, just put some dirt in your pockets every single day that you're going out the house and just shake it out. It might take you several decades, but it would be worth it. I had something similar today, actually.
That tourist story, that tourist attraction in London, it was just a big mound of dirt that they were trying to charge people like a tenner to climb up to get a view of like some monument or something like that. I'm sure that was it. And it was opened in like April and was shut by Christmas, so it was obviously a roaring success.
Just a version of that in Edinburgh, Tony, you can go through.
Well, they can have a pile up and they can see it in my own window when I'm getting changed and charge £10 a pot.
I had something similar today. There was a couple of guys in front. Yeah, just being charged £10 a pot. No, there was a couple of guys just digging up my front garden, and I was like, what is going on? And I opened the door and said, politely, because, you know, they had shovels, I didn't. What are you doing? It's like, oh, we're planting a hedge for you. I was like, all right, fine, go for it. I'm not going to stop you. So I've gained a hedge today, which is more than can be said for 16 of the teams in the Scottish Cup, because today we are doing a little bit of a Scottish Cup roundup. It is the most wonderful time of the year for the Scottish Cup, the fourth round. Unfortunately, because of the sheer number of games, and because of what that then means for the highlights, you're going to get not the traditional roundup that you usually get following some weekend action. What we're going to do is go through as many games as we can, a bit of a whistle-stop tour, and just discussing the main talking points from each. Now, the most obvious place to go is where the, well, at least where the cup holders exit, premature exit, some may say, I wouldn't, came about, which is to the mining towns of Fife. We are going to Kelty, where Kelty Hearts put out St Johnstone in extra time to lead to a bit of a corridor of booing for the Sainties. I mean, there's so much to discuss here. Who wants to jump in and stick the first knife in St Johnstone?
Well, all I will say is that I've only seen, as far as I know, Kelty Hearts play once, and it was in the 1999 Scottish Junior Cup final when they lost to co-winning Rangers, my hometown team. So quite an achievement to be able to lose to co-winning Rangers and within, 20 odd years, knock the Scottish Cup holders out on, and deservedly the right word, I don't know, they definitely held their own against a St Johnstone team that, is just bereft of everything at the moment.
What would really worry me if I'm a St Johnstone fan is they've put a whole raft of new signings into that team, and they all play, they're Cleary playing, Butterfield, I know he came a bit earlier than the rest, Butterfield, they've got their Gallagher, the new wing-back, and they had the Nadir. So you've brought in over a third of a new team there. And the first thing that they experience when you've already, rather than giving the team the boost that you would assume and playing a lower league opposition, they now go into the dregs and they'll now know how everyone feels instantly. And that would kind of worry me, because you're hoping that these sort of new guys sort of bring it up a notch in training. They're not sort of hamstrung by the sort of 10 defeats in a row or whatever, but instantly they've been brought down to everyone else's level, and that would really, really, pardon me, and your first or second game, you've already had the experience walking through the crowds where, like, a group of posh people shout at you.
Yeah, it's not really a great introduction. It does remind me, as so often things like this do, of Jim McIntyre's Dundee, because when Dundee were going down, we did something similar where we signed about half of English League One, and it did not come to pass. The St Johnstone version of it seems to be signing half of either the League of Ireland or the Irish League. I can't remember exactly who's come from where, but I think the latest signing is John Mann, who just sounds made up to me. I don't believe he really exists. Cue him scoring the winner in midweek. But
I'll go fill your da and say that I have reservations about Cleary on the basis of him going into a 50-50 and then being quite... he didn't react well to a 50-50 in terms of not just kind of getting back up on his feet. He seems to be making a lot of it, which was something that was on the highlights, and it's something that it's something that always worries me when you watch a player new to a league try to, he's stepping up a level certainly, and he's playing against a lower league team and he's immediately, just looking for a foul and he might be a good player. I'm well aware that is not really a valid way to judge a guy, but as a first impression goes, as the first time I've seen him do anything in a St Johnstone strip, it makes me question things. Now, I would say it's hard to actually be that critical of their defensive performance necessarily. They conceded a goal, now not the best goal to concede, but it felt like one of those days rather than necessarily an absolute disgrace of a performance. Darren Jameson had a couple of absolutely fantastic saves in the second half of the game, I think it was, and it's very much like when your luck's not going with you, none of those go in, and Darren Jameson, a good goalkeeper at that level, but we you wouldn't expect him to necessarily be pulling off those saves, and when it's, when you've lost 9 games in a row going into this, you could see it coming a mile away, and it was the least surprising thing that happened all weekend, I think.
Let's actually combine this with who Kelty Hearts will be facing in the last 16. They're facing St Mirren, who put out Ayr United. Do either of you think that St Mirren will be a little bit fearful of this game against Kelty, or do you think that the fact that St Johnstone are in such a rut, they're in their nadir, if you will, do you really think that St Mirren will sort of be looking at this a little bit fearfully, with any good reason?
I think if it's at home for St Mirren, aren't they? They've been drawn as the home side. And that that sort of takes away the more magical side of it and stops me thinking that Kelty will be able to do that again. I know Kelty have got money and they've got well-known players to their team, certainly well-known lower league players. So St Mirren are sort of getting their act together, it seems, and they've sort of rode out that tough period. So I would assume, certainly the way they put Ayr United to the sword there, but I mean, it was over and within half an hour, and I would assume that they would, at home, would have not too many problems putting Kelty away. But others might know much more than me about the sort of pros of Kelty and what they'd actually be capable of.
So I was going to say, when you look at that Kelty squad, like, there are guys that would probably still get a contract in the Championship, a couple of them potentially. You saw Higginbottom, he's got quality, and you know, he's always been a bit flaky as a player through his career, but his quality's never been in doubt. And then a guy like Nathan Austin, who you know, if not in the Championship, he could definitely be playing in League One. So they have good players, but they shouldn't have players to be able to beat a Premiership team. None of their team are Premiership quality players. And St Mirren's are, and St Mirren are at home. So no, I wouldn't expect them to have any trouble. And as you say, they swept aside Ayr United, not the toughest task, Ayr United in a cup competition. But Greg Kelty getting the goal would have been nice for him. His first for St Mirren as well. He seems to have come on to a wee bit of form. But yeah, that's like... I know, like, Somerset Park in the cup is a hard place to go. They're not going to win the cup, but they can... take a scalp, and it did look like one of those games that St Mirren could have been a wee bit of bother, but I actually think probably the fact that they got their result in midweek probably kind of helped them, you know, be a bit more positive going into this. And yeah, it was very comfortable for them.
And just before, I know Gary, I know you want to get through quickly, but I did just want to mention it'll be disappointing for St John's as well, with Gallagher making the error that led to the goal. Again, when I'm talking about the new guys that have come in, he instantly is at fault to create the losing goal. And also with Davidson, there seems to be this idea that he should be protected because of what happened last season, which I totally understand. But I think I saw you tweet about it, Craig. You were saying that's 10 losses in a row and then being defeated from Kelty Hearts. I would argue you probably have been protected. And now we're coming to the stage where any more defeats and you don't turn it around, you're just going to have to go whether it's right or not, because you don't want to get relegated.
I will. You did absolutely not just ruin, but destroy and blown to a million smithereens my perfect, exquisite link there, Tony. But
so
it's fine,
sorry.
I'm over it. But just on that point, I think that I saw Eric Nicholson from The Courier, famous St Johnson fan, did pick up on the fact that I think this is... The way he was putting it is that Callum Davidson deserves this transfer window, given that in the last transfer window, you know, St Johnson's sort of backbone was basically ripped out in the transfer market. He deserves this transfer window to try and put it right. And I think that it's always difficult in the January transfer window, because I think you either have to punt your manager right at the start of it, or you stick with them. Because if you punt them in the middle of it, unless you've got someone who's been lined up and is basically announced with a scarf over the head a couple of hours later, showing that maybe the conversations were ongoing for much longer, then to a certain extent, if your club is in a position where you know the squad's not good enough, you're not going to give that new guy enough time to sort of bring his own ideas in. You know, I'm looking at Craig here, who's probably thinking about this for his own side as well.
Well, you could do exactly what Kelly did last season, which is to wait almost until basically the day the transfer window's closed and then sack your manager, which was definitely an interesting approach, which fortunately we didn't do again this season. But yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of Kelly, we've managed to find a way to knit it all together, which is lovely. Sadly, Kelly couldn't do that because they went out in extra time to Dundee United. But I think we've got a little bit to say about certainly Dundee United's defence, which does it have a case for the defence?
Yeah, I wasn't that impressed with them, to be honest. Like, what won the game for them was a wee extra bit of quality from Levitt. I mean, it's a beautiful, you know, the way he took that, the way he kind of shifted his feet in the finish so quickly. On the whole, I think Kelly matched them for the game. I wasn't sure what to expect from it, but that reminded me very much of how Derek McKenzie's Aberdeen team used to come down to Rugby Park and play, turn it into a scrap, which is exactly what was needed. Kelly's such a massive threat from set pieces all the time. Ash Taylor in particular. I thought he was a colossus at both ends. I know he made a mistake. I don't know if it's just his mistake for the opening goal, but he was excellent. And Dundee United really couldn't cope with that at set pieces. Like, Kelly were winning every ball at set pieces. And they did do the last ditch stuff well, you know, clearances off the line and stuff like that. But also they were so easily beaten by, like, simple balls. I think they were overcommitted. Like, they felt like they were trying to set their stall out and go out and try and smash Kelly. I don't know if they underestimated the fact that, you know, we're not that bad. And it felt like, yeah, there was just so, it was such an open shape they had. Charlie Mulgrew didn't have his best game. I'm a big fan of his, but yeah, he wasn't great. And yeah, if Kieran Freeman, who's playing right back, looked good going forward, but he was able to be got at. And yeah, I left Rugby Park really frustrated because I think Kelly should have won that game. Just didn't have that wee bit of quality that United did.
What would I was looking at this because I think it's been the general consensus with the struggles that Dundee United have had both last season and this season would be they don't score enough goals. But, I mean, I was having a look, just with you mentioning it all, Craig, about how you weren't to impress the defence. I had a wee peek, and they've only kept one clean sheet since they thumped Hibs 3-0 at Easter Road, and that was when they beat Aberdeen, which might be one of their only wins as well in that period. That's a hell of a lot of games, and I think it seemed generally everyone thought that the Scott McMahon's been a really good signing, great in there. Mulgrew and Edwards had a really great partnership, and Freeman coming in at right back. But the facts don't really back it up, if you like. So I've not seen a lot of them very recently. So it was interesting to hear that was what you took away from that game instantly, was how easy it was to get at Dundee United.
Yeah, and you talk about the other end, you talk about the lack of goals. Well, they obviously signed the top scorer in the Premiership, but, and I know he played in part of the front three, but they stuck him, he was basically out in the right wing for the whole game. He had no impact on the game at all. And to do that, I know Mark McNulty scored, but to do that in order to put Mark McNulty through the middle just feels like an insult to him. They didn't, as I say, United were fine, they weren't like awful or anything like that, but it was just like, you know, I've seen Kelly struggling in the Championship, and yeah, I appreciate it as a new manager, and we do look a lot better, but they seem to let us create a hell of a lot more chances than Morton or Inverness, or even, you know, like the better or the worst teams in the Championship. I think it's the best we've played all season and the most chances we've had all season, and that includes like beating Queen of the South 4-0 at home.
And obviously, Dundee United will be going on to play Partick Thistle in the last 16. Partick Thistle, who knocked out Airdrie Onions. Thistle are another side that are riding relatively high in the Championship. Could you see them, whether or not they have Zach Rudden, is obviously subject to negotiation, and my sources tell me that he will be a Dundee player by the end of this month. So do you see Brian Graham returning to, well, he's not returning to Tannadice actually, do you see him returning to play Dundee United and haunt them?
So first of all, I hope you do take Zach Rudden before the end of the season. It would be a boost, because he's, I think, one of the best players I've seen in the Championship this season. Yeah, I think they're a really good team, Thistle. I think they are, them and Arbroath and Kelly are the teams I now think will finish in the top three in the Championship. I think a lot of people have been saying that. They kind of scraped by Airdrie, but they got through. I've been quite impressed with them when I've seen them, with the exception of the first game. Like, since we beat them at Fir Hill, they've started, their defensive record's been superb since then. They came to Rugby Park and did a real number on Kelly, and then I thought they were the better team the game a couple of weeks ago. So yeah, I think they have a chance of winning the league, actually.
It's interesting you say that, because I don't follow it quite to the level you do, and I was looking at it, and then like, so part of this only have one win in five in the league, but then I looked at it and sort of like, there doesn't seem to be really anyone with any good form in the Championships apart from Arbroath. Have the best, and they've got three wins in their last five. So I mean, it just shows how tough it is. But with the what seems like the incredible drop-off from Raith Rovers for a range of different reasons, which you might come on to later. If they're a team is looking up for it, then there definitely is playoff spots to be had for Partick Thistle.
The interesting thing about the league leaders, you can tell that Tony, I had yet another exquisite link which you torpedoed, because I was going to speak about league leaders and I was going to say that Thistle may not be league leaders, but I'll tell you who is. Cove. They played Hibs, and Hibs put them out, requiring extra time. Tony, talk us through that one, because you would surely think that a Premiership side at home would take care of Paul Hartley's men without the need for an extra 30 minutes.
Very loaded questions there, Gary. I see you're very frustrated at how I've ruined your link.
Exquisite, honestly. I had them all worked out and everything.
I know you did tell us the running order before, but so I should know when it's coming. It was worrying. It was frustrating. I would say that Hibs obviously made a raft of changes. They went into the game with one centre half, for example, but Hibs were surprisingly one-paced. They got the goal disallowed, which definitely should be a goal, but I felt that Cove sort of lived with Hibs really easily, and that's what was frustrating. Cove never really looked like scoring. I mean, I think they created sort of two openings in the 2 hours, so I was never really overly worried, but it did worry me, like how easily I felt that they lived with us. And it felt like Muller, obviously it was his debut, I was relatively impressed with him all round, and he looked like the only one that was really going to open them up until sort of Jamie Murphy and Nisbet done it in extra time. But I was, in terms of Muller, I was quite impressed with his touch. I liked his acceleration over short periods, certainly not over long, but I'll leave Craig to talk about that in a second maybe. But his intelligence, his work rate, he was moving across the whole of the front, across both wings, and he used the ball sensibly. He didn't always look to beat a man. He'd done it at the right times, and then he would just lay it off and carry on. So, on first impressions, I was relatively happy with Muller, as much as you can read into him playing against Cove Rangers. But, Craig, you would have noticed something about him maybe running over a distance.
Or maybe you wouldn't have.
Or maybe you wouldn't have, sorry.
You never know.
Sorry, I put a message in the chat to say I couldn't talk for the next wee minute, but obviously we didn't see it. So apologies for the drone in the background. The washing machine appears to have kick-started itself into life, which is, an interruption. If you can't hear it, then it's great, but I assume you can, because it's quite loud.
I can, yes. But yeah, oh well. Craig, I was talking about Muller over a long distance.
Yeah, he's. I had that one when he chased back and he got outrun down the wing. I had major reservations. It's Fraser Fivey that's outrunning, not a spring chicken. A guy who I would say one of the reasons he's playing at the level he is his fitness. I don't mean he's not a fit player. I mean he got injuries and stuff that maybe done his legs. And I don't think it was a lack of energy from Muller. I think he could not be arse tracking back, and that would worry me. Pace was a bit of a theme in this game in general, because I just thought Cove, when they did have their chances, were too slow. Like, that was the biggest thing I got, especially, I don't know if they were tired or whatever towards the end. Had they been a wee bit, and I don't want to say fitter, because that's again not the right word, had they had a bit more pace about them, I think they would have beat Hibs. Because the openings that Hibs gave them, now maybe that was deliberate because they looked at them and went, you know what, they're not going to hurt us like this. But I thought Hibs were really, really, really poor, really open. And I thought, again, as much as Cove played well, they defended superbly. They had some really good performances in there. It would only have taken a wee tiny bit more for them to actually get the win in
or
that
a set
game.
Or a set piece or something like that. No, I totally agree with you. And a few people were given an opportunity for Hibs in that game, and I think that'll have signed their death warrants, if you like, your Halbergs, etc. I'm sure Sir Johnson will be along, because he's a sort of slowish central midfielder and they fucking love them.
he's a player that they've heard of, regardless of whether or not he's a good fit. So that'll do. I mean, obviously, Hibs will be going on to play Arbroath in the next round, Tony, which means a nice wee trip up to Gayfield for you.
Fingers
which I believe
crossed.
Duncan Mackay is organising for everybody.
Yeah, well, it was an idea that I came up with because he said he was filming that day, and I was like, they should maybe try to do a shift in when Duncan Mackay is a fan and he has to organise everyone's fan day, and I thought that would be the perfect opportunity for Duncan to do that. But I'm really excited about Gayfield. It's beautiful. I've never had the opportunity to go and watch Hibs, so I'm really keen. I'm just very worried about stinking sort of times for kickoffs. I'm hoping we got moved to a Thursday night, which is like the worst slot that there was, so I'm hoping that doesn't happen again. But I really just want to go to see Hibs Arbroath in the afternoon, and that'll certainly be a tough tie. I mean, Arbroath have lost the big striker back to Livingston, but they replaced him with Craig Whiting, which just seems like sort of really great business in the position that they are.
Yeah, and Whiting had an absolutely terrific outside of the boot pass to one of the Arbroath goals as well, who beat Darvel 3-0, Craig Whiting obviously starting his career at Dundee, and it is to Dundee that we go next, who put out Dumbarton.
Gary, Dundee looked absolutely fucking hopeless in this game.
I was waiting for a round of applause. I thought that was what was coming after.
Sorry.
It's what I was trying to do there. Phil was definitely going to hate me for attempting to use the soundboard.
Don't worry, Craig. It's not your fault. You saved the day, if anything. Yeah.
But yes, Dundee somehow managed to squeeze past Dumbarton on a rather lumpy pitch, but not half as lumpy as the performance, perhaps. But Craig, you were saying something which I couldn't hear as I was mucking about with the soundboard.
I just literally said that Dundee looked absolutely fucking hopeless, was the quote I used.
It's a fair quote. Yes, Dundee have not been quick off the mark in this transfer window, in line with pretty much general transfer window policy for Dundee. And because of that, the squad does still look threadbare. Obviously, by this point, Jason Cummings had flown off to Australia to start his new career with Central Coast Mariners, leaving us with a relatively thin bench. There's a couple of guys who've come back on loan. Whether or not the younger players will be good enough definitely remains to be seen, but I think Dundee will have to sign several players. The squad that was put out included Cammy Kerr playing at left-back, who was viciously assaulted for the red card, no matter what the highlights tell you. It was vicious. It wasn't just a light tap in the stomach at all. It required a Lee Griffiths penalty halfway through the second half, and what the highlights didn't show was that Dumbarton actually had a few decent chances at the end and a decent penalty shout as well. Or at least the highlights I saw didn't show that, and I think it felt a little bit like a banana skin avoided. I do think had Dundee lost that game, Mick Pake would have been gone, and regardless of what I said earlier about transfer windows and not chucking your manager at the last minute, I think that would have just it would have been seen similar to those that faced the St Johnstone players when they went out to Kelty. It really does go to show the fine margins of cup football. Dundee will be going on to play Peterhead, who beat East Kilbride in the fourth round. It's an away tie, but Dundee have played Peterhead several times lately in the League Cup. So it's by that stage of the draw, it was probably as kind a draw as I could hope for, because the alternatives were all Premiership tie against St Mirren, no thanks. Playing resurgent Partick Thistle, no thanks. Playing Dundee United, absolutely no thanks. And playing Kelty, again, no thanks. I would actually rather face Peterhead than Kelty, despite Peterhead being in the division above, because, like you were saying earlier, Craig, I think Kelty have a stronger squad than necessarily is let on. But no, Dundee will definitely need to strengthen significantly, particularly with a relegation battle game coming up in just a few days' time, and we will be talking about that on the Patreon. So if you don't subscribe yet, you really bloody well should.
Gary, can I ask? I mean, McPake's never been the sort of like most popular guy at Dundee, and I know he pulled off the playoff win last season, but that probably didn't look likely at midway through the season. So do you think that, as you said, do you think he really is that close to just being emptied and nobody will shed a tear? Like, so I'm assuming if you're saying he would have got sacked off the back of Dumbarton's result, I'm going to presume that if he loses a relegation battle after losing God knows how many games in a row in the league to St Johnstone, that that would be of a similar sort of ilk as getting knocked out by Dumbarton.
I still think, even though it may seem as if the moment of danger has passed, the next couple of games we've got are against St Johnstone, which is obviously a huge, huge game, 6-pointer, could go bottom. Well, we would go bottom if we lost. And the game after that, I think, is the Dundee Derby. So if you lose to go bottom and then lose a Derby, even though the transfer window's shut, it could lead to changes being made. And, you know, Dundee have been linked in the past to Jack Ross. He's obviously available again, whether or not he feels ready to come in, whether or not he feels that he wants to come into a club that's suffering in the way it is another matter entirely. Obviously, we're about to sign Niall McGinn, apparently, on an 18-month deal, 34-year-old Niall McGinn, winger, when we need a left-back.
You've got really
right
good
back.
Wingers, though. Wingers is not the position that he's really have totally too much of an issue.
You don't need to tell me these things. It's just baffling. But, I mean, it's probably not fair to comment until the very end of the window, because I think all the talk is that there's a couple of defenders that are about to come over the line that I think tomorrow's probably going to be quite a big day in terms of tomorrow being Tuesday. Quite a big day in terms of Dundee signings. Anyone listening back to this on Wednesday will probably be laughing at me, but no, I think it's a crucial week for James McPake. I do think that there's been several points where I think there would have been a chance to ditch him, but John Elms is fairly patient as far as a chairman goes, and he didn't do it. I think those would have been going out to St Johnstone in the cup. I was furious about that at the time, for chance for a first Hampden appearance in 15 years, just totally wasted away. The two games against Ross County as well, both chances for Dundee to put clear blue water between them and the bottom of the league. And I mean, this is a total hypothetical, but I think definitely losing to Dumbarton in the cup would have been enough potentially. But there's so many things that need to be fixed when it comes to...
Well, Gary, maybe he will do the unthinkable. And like last season, when he just completely turned it around midway through the season, but nobody thought of, and got Dundee up to the playoffs, maybe he'll inexplicably do it again and Dundee will go on and lift the Scottish Cup, or even get to the sort of any signed round that has final in its name.
Tony, I will take a trip to Hampden. I've not been to Hampden since I've been legally old enough to drink.
That's fucking mental. Okay. That is absolutely mental.
2006 was the last time that Dundee featured, and that was going out to Gretna. There's definitely some sort of story about a Dundee curse that apparently is linked to us playing Benfica or something. I can't remember, but I will look it out for a future podcast.
I mean, because the size of club, you would argue that Dundee are maybe 8th or 9th largest club in the country. So for them not to have even got a little fanny around at Hampden one time just seems utterly ridiculous.
Tony, see right now, if you said to me you'll get thumped 7-0 by Celtic in the semi-final, I'd take it. I'd take it for the day out. Why do I mention Celtic? Because they beat Alloa. What a link. Celtic beat Alloa 2-1 at the Indoor Drill to progress to the fifth round. Unfortunately, you did see, I think, Lila Bada went off injured, but more concerningly for us, given that we support Scotland, Callum McGregor went off for what Ange Postecoglou described as an extended time. What do you think the impact of this will be on both Celtic and Scotland, assuming that he may still be at risk due to the just the length of the injury for appearing in the playoffs?
For both, it's a big blow. He's been very good for Scotland. It's a massive blow for Celtic. We spoke quite at length, I think, earlier in the season about how important he is to that Celtic team. He's just had, like without him, the midfield just disappears. They just don't have another central midfielder of any quality now. Yeah, they've been recruiting in that area of the park and trying to, but He for me has been the best, probably the best player in the league this season, certainly up player. And yeah, I think if he was out, I am curious as to what Ange Postecoglou describes as an extended period of time, because it is so vague that it's actually useless. Like, is it extended for a type of injury that they got? Because I thought it was like a facial injury, where you would expect a player maybe to only be out short term, unless you're Karol McHugh. or is it a facial injury? Or sorry, is it extended as in 3 months? Is it 3 days? Is it calling it that because there's an Old Firm game coming up in a week and he's just trying to play his cards close to his chest with that? I don't know, but yeah, it would be a blow for Scotland as well, because I think that pair of McGregor and Gilmore is really good in the middle of the park. So ideally, he is back for Scotland. I really couldn't give a toss whether he's back for Celtic or when.
Let's have a rest for Callum McGregor, actually, and come back around early March. Get a few more games under his belt, get fully up to speed, and then bang in for your Ukraine game. But I totally agree with you in terms of the way that they play. He doesn't play literally as a defensive midfielder for Celtic, but he's he plays at the base, and it's his energy that allows them to play that really intense pressing game where they get the triangles around them. You take him out of that, I don't think the other players can do it to the same level. And we may be able to get to see quite how good that centre-half pairing actually has become based on the clean sheets that they've gathered and how little pressure that they're put under in a lot of games. Be really interested to see how that goes. And I'd imagine Ediguchi, he went off injured, which would be worrying because I'd assume he would be the sort of direct replacement to play in that role. And he's not there now. So near Beaton is probably next in line. Not great. Not great.
And obviously they'll be going on to play Raith Rovers at Parkhead in the next round. And the Heated Ball is doing the decent job that they always do for both sides of the Old Firm. Tony, I believe that you were chatting to our good friend of the podcast, a secret friend, he's part of it, Andy Harrow.
I think there's a tier above friend of the podcast, which is what Andy is very much in.
Yeah, close associate.
I was fortunate enough to talk to him because it seemed when we were talking is the sort of drop off in form of Daniel Zanata and the fact that he really struggled against Banks of D, which and apparently their fullback was rather plump, and they were disappointed to see that he didn't sort of give him a good hiding. But that's been something that's been ongoing for a while. Andy was saying that Zanata was. At the start of the season, he was playing on the left of a front three with Varian and Aidan Connolly on the right. And he said that they were absolutely superb during that period. And while Varian wasn't maybe much of a goal-scoring forward, he really did occupy defenders there, which maybe allowed for Zanata's ability to come inside, where he sort of became the budget Arjen Robben of Scottish football. But then another thing, an issue he's saying is, this is for Raith Rovers in general, they lost Brad Spencer to a broken leg at the start of December, and the form has fallen off a cliff for the whole team. Spencer was the most advanced centre midfield. I think they've only won once since then. I think that was against Craigskillie, and that was just the week after, before they sort of settled in the difficulties they were going to have. And he was the most advanced central midfielder. He controlled the possession and he knew when to let the ball go. And it meant that, again, that Zanata was being found in areas where he was able to be more one-on-one. And then taking that little touch round was much easier because he didn't get crowded out. With Spencer not being there now, I think a lot of teams are able to sort of gang up on players like Zanata. So we'll see that everyone else is too slow in possession. He is a championship winger. I mean, his form was never going to continue at that high level, but strangely enough, Ayr didn't sort of seem to love him last season when he was there. He's never really had any other period where he was as quite as electric as that. So I think there's somewhere in the middle between sort of the deficiencies of Raith with the injuries, the fullback doesn't really get forward as much to give him more to go on, and a wee bit more of a regression to the mean for Dario Zanata. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes, and maybe if Raith Rovers are able to maybe recruit to, maybe that'll bring the best out of Zanata again, because they're going to need something, because they are looking like this season could easily just totally fizzle out.
And as I mentioned, they will be playing Celtic in the next round. In what seems like a real coincidence, the other League Two team that hasn't yet been mentioned, Annan Athletic, will be playing Rangers in the fifth round. One day, Craig Anderson, you will use your statistical know-how to to map all of this out for us and to knock this silly conspiracy on the head.
As much as Craig likes to be a wind-up merchant, I don't know if that'll be worth...
Just open... It's okay, Craig. Worth your You live in Glasgow. What's the worst that can happen?
I would note that they did play each other in the fifth round last season. But anyway...
you're just noting facts. So yes, Rangers obviously coming through their very tough home tie on Saturday.
No, Friday night.
Friday night. I knew it was on
Friday
night.
It was on TV, not that anybody wanted to watch it or cared.
No. Putting four past Sterling Albion.
Well done, he's 13.
Yeah. I mean, actually, you say that, but it did seem to be that Rangers were at least using the opportunity to, maybe not Brandon Barker, I couldn't believe he was actually still at Rangers, but to blood in a few more youngsters.
Yeah, well, they brought on not from the start, but they brought on Lowry early in the game because of an injury, and he obviously scored the goal. I'm not surprised that a player who's been playing all right in the Lowland League can also do all right against a League Two team, because there's a gap of quality between the middle of League Two and the bottom half of the Lowland League, but there are probably two or three teams at the top of the Lowland League who are better than the teams at the bottom. We'll find out, I guess, in a few months' time. But it's a perfect game for Rangers to give these guys a run out, and I'm glad they did, because if they don't get the minutes, then when else are they going to be? Obviously, Nathan Patterson's had to go down to the Premier League because he thinks he can get a better chance of getting a run of games there than he could at Rangers. They do have to address that. I think a lot of the stuff they're doing off the park with recruitment and the way they're dealing with their transfer business has been really good recently. But if they want to start doing that, the best way to make money is by doing what they did with Patterson and getting big money for one of your youngsters. But you're not going to get the money if you don't expose them to first team football and let the world see them. So, yeah. I think they could do with something a wee bit different. I've really not been that impressed with them in the league recently, so I think sometimes, you know, just adding a bit of freshness instead of bringing Cedric Itten back, I don't understand that one bit.
Craig, I really agree with you about the sort of the freshness. I think a young player is really good. I find Rangers, like Aberdeen's where it came to a head, but that game at Pittodrie's been coming. For Rangers, they've had a few big results under Van Bronckhorst. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it's been all bad, and they've been able to hold teams at arm's length, but they've never really... So the energy's sort of been zapped a bit. Like, Kamara's looking a bit under the weather in terms of his performance levels, which is very unusual because we've literally never seen that since he came in at Rangers. And obviously Jack's still injured, which is another worry, and again with we're talking about Callum McGregor. I mean, we'd love to see Ryan Jack being back around the team because he would do a very similar job based on the last time he was fit. But I think young players with enthusiasm, all they want to do is impress. They're going to be so willing to break the lines. They're going to run their fucking arses off because this is their big moment. This is their big break. And that naivety, sometimes some people might call it, can actually be used in a positive manner, and it can really sting the rest of the team. So I think for Rangers, a young player maybe coming in maybe could possibly be the best thing they could do to sort of maybe awaken a lot of other players from a slumber, and him, that young player maybe leading from the front in terms of sort of attitude and energy and enthusiasm and desperate to impress. And it'll also bring the fans. The fans are always going to get excited when a young player comes in, especially at the level of Rangers or Celtic. I'd always be excited if I was a supporter of a club of that size and a young player came into the team, especially in the league, because you'd just be, I would have an assumption in my head that they're going to be pretty handy if they're breaking into sort of that level of club at a young age.
Speaking of being excited about Rangers players,
and in Athletic, that was a good comeback for them. I don't know because you mentioned them, and I don't know if you're going to move on from that game completely.
I was, but it's okay. You're helping level out the exquisite links with Tony here. But yes, obviously they were able to put out Clyde Bank and end probably one of the great cup romance stories from this season.
Yeah, it's arguably almost an upset that Annan did beat Clyde Bank. I don't know. It certainly wouldn't have been a surprise either way, that result. And I think it to find the kind of dig to score. That's probably your SPFL experience kind of coming to the fore, and about the fitness, the wee bit of extra fitness that gets you a couple of goals in the last minute. It did look like an absolutely terrible mistake from the Clydebank keeper for the equaliser, but yeah, that was the last piece of non-league involvement in the cup for the season as well.
Of course, I can't find a way. I was trying to link Andy Halliday because it's Rangers. He now plays for Hearts. Hearts put out Auchinleck Talbot.
But they were a non-league team who got knocked out, Gary, so it could have been perfect.
I didn't want to say non-league because I had a feeling that Craig might correct my...
Same league as Clydebank, so there you go. You could have...
I could have done it.
Yeah.
Hoist by my own petard, but never mind. But yes, it's unusual for Hearts to come up so late in a Terra Scottish football podcast, so enjoy it while it lasts. They put out Auchinleck Talbot, a very professional performance in a game that, regardless of, I think, which Premiership side it is, you never know what's going to happen if you're drawn against a side like Auchinleck.
Yeah, I mean, they've shown what they put out Ackies in the last round. You know they can get that result, but I think obviously playing like a full-time team...
A good team.
The third best team in the country probably is a step too far. They are five divisions below them, and yeah, you can talk about they're clearly not that level of team, but they're also not a Premiership level team, and that was shown here that they didn't really have the first 2 minutes of the game I thought, oh, Auchinleck are at them here, because they absolutely like kind of started like a house on fire and had a decent half chance right at the start, but after that Hearts were really comfortable,
and they went for their throat a bit of Hearts. Sort of Barry Mackay, he's really had his eye in recently with assists, and he sort of set up the first one straight away with like a lovely clipped ball, and Andy Halliday, who I think I missed this game. He was playing left wing back, is that right? Is that where they had him from the start, and then they had Devlin and Haran in the centre, but he'd sort of broke the lines and got the header and scored, and that seemed to be a bit of a theme. Andy Halliday was really driving, like, even if you just watched the highlights, he was really driving the team forward, breaking through the lines. He sort of, his great ball for the goal in the second half, I think it was maybe Boyce's header, maybe I've got that wrong. Not Cochrane's header, when he put it to the back post, and we just don't see any of that from Andy Halliday when he plays in the league. And I know that Hearts are about to give him a new contract, but he often plays really one paced and really he plays quite simply when he plays for Hearts in the league, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, that suggests that if he ever does get that move to Pollock, he'll fit in quite nicely.
And obviously, Hearts will be going on to play Livingston in one of the few all Premiership ties in the next round. Livingston putting out Ross County in a game on which I think none of us have anything to add other than well done, Livingston, who are continuing a fairly decent run of form lately. So we'll move on to the final couple of games we've got. Do we go with the banter game? Do we go with the easy one? Let's get the relatively pedestrian game out of the way first. Aberdeen putting out Edinburgh City at home to set up a fifth round tie against Motherwell. Is there anything that we want to say about the Dandy Dons?
No, they do need to get, you know, every win does help at this point. Like, do you know what I mean? They started well and they've started to find a wee bit of form. And so just turning up and comfortably seeing someone aside in the Scottish Cup is not going to do that any harm off the back of, because it would, you know, off the back of getting the result against Rangers, which they thoroughly deserved. I thought they were really good in that game. They could have easily, you know, gone and, okay, they were probably always going to beat Edinburgh City, but, you know, it could have been a nervier, a 1-0, or it could have gone to extra time or something like that. It was two seasons ago, they drew Stenhouse Muir at this stage of the Cup, so it's not something they haven't done before against you know, poorer opposition, but... So it wasn't this stage of the Cup, it was around after this, I think, but nonetheless, you know what I mean. Or maybe it was this stage, doesn't matter. It was just really comfortable for them.
Well, it could be Ryan Hedges' last game, maybe his last goal for Aberdeen. They'll be really hoping not. I really like watching Hedges. I always actually think that Hedges could do more. He's of such high quality that I always think that his numbers don't reflect how good he is. Maybe shades of, maybe that's similar to something that's happened to Barry Mackay. Going back to talking about him, like over the years, maybe his numbers don't match up to how good he actually looks, and maybe that's about other players in the team. But I think they would struggle to replace the quality of Hedges, and they need to get players back because Ojo might get a new contract. Who knows? He was playing sort of out wide again, which has been a feature. I know he done really well to create the sort of the key pass or whatever it is they call it for one of the goals. But yeah, I think they'll be desperate not to lose Hedges and Jet. I mean, that miss doesn't get much worse than that. And after what seemed like a really, really good start for Jet at Aberdeen, an interesting start playing in sort of interesting positions that you never thought, it's sort of fallen off a cliff a bit, hasn't it?
And obviously, as I've mentioned, Aberdeen will be in the other, I think there's only two, could be wrong, all-premiership tie in the last 16. They will be playing Motherwell, who finally, eventually, managed to deal with Greenock Morton at home. You could say they almost had an accident, but they were obviously almost undone by Dougie Imrie, who has taken charge at Morton. I think quite a few people took some premature schadenfreude at that decision, but he doesn't seem to be doing that bad a job. I am going to turn to our championship correspondent, Craig Anderson, here. He says with a laugh while he still can about this, because it does seem as if Imrie's putting together a vaguely effective Morton team, which is no bad thing when you've got Jack Hamilton in goal.
Yeah, well, I mean, he seems to be doing really well for a start, apart from anything, but... they seem to have turned a corner with him. I don't think it's necessarily been too much in the way of personnel changes. He just seems to have, you know, found a way to get a lot more out of the team than McPherson did. So they played against Killie at Rugby Park, and to be honest, they got a point and deserved it. Just before Christmas, sorry, just before the New Year, I think that was. He's turned it round in terms of results, and he was quite close to what would have been I don't know if a famous result is quite right, because there's not that big a gap between the sides, and they did only lose to Motherwell on penalties last season, but a good result that would have been to go to Firth Park and get a win. Not many teams have done that this season, but yeah, ultimately they just couldn't hold on. It was a really good goal from Robbie Muirhead. He does have the penchant for the big occasion, I think. He obviously absolutely ran the show in the playoffs in the summer there, and then turned up with that moment as well. But Motherwell finally, they had quite a lot of chances before, because the voiceover on the Sports Scene highlights said and after Motherwell making a number of attempts at scoring, and I saw I think it was the third attempt coming, I'm like, oh, this will be the goal, and it still wasn't the goal, and then it eventually falls to Donnelly, and it was a really, really nice finish from him. That's something Motherwell have always had, really, is that kind of dig to always pick out that kind of result, and ultimately, as people say, you're like, it doesn't matter how you play, it doesn't matter what happens, if you are a biggish club like Motherwell are, and you get yourself through a round and through a round and through a round, that's all that matters in the cup, and they're there, and if they can put Aberdeen out, they'll fancy themselves for it.
It doesn't get bigger than this season for the cup. The riches on offer for the guaranteed European group stages at the end make this arguably the biggest cup there's ever been since we were so shite in Europe that getting this win in the cup didn't actually really mean anything in terms of European football.
And the draw for the fifth round, now the fifth round ties will be played on the weekend of the 12th of February, but to recap, you've got Annan versus Rangers, Arbroath v Hibs, Celtic versus Raith Rovers, Hearts v Livy, Motherwell v Aberdeen, Partick Thistle v Dundee United, Peterhead versus Dundee, and St Mirren versus Kelty Hearts. I partly ran through that to make sure we did not miss any games, which we didn't. So if you can get yourself along to one of those games, whether as a supporter of one of the teams or otherwise, do it, because the romance of the cup is what we're all about. But we will leave it there for just now. Obviously, there's a big midweek card in the Premiership coming up, and me, Tony and Craig are going to go and discuss three of those games, the relegation six-pointer, the potential battle for third, would you say? Maybe? Is that maybe too rich? No, what am I talking about? You know what? If you want to know what I'm talking about, subscribe to the Patreon. Come on over. Listen in. We'll be doing a deep dive on those three games. So until then, thank you again, the Anderson brothers. I will go to Craig first.
Thank you.
And Tony.
My pleasure.
The pleasure is all ours, dear listeners. So thanks again.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.